Hello, everyone. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you most want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you most want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org. And we are funded by the Great Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. You can learn more about the PNWA by going to pnwa.org. Let's see. So if you're in Seattle and you're a writer, well, the place is about to become lousy with writers. AWP, the Association of Writers Programs, I think it's what it stands for. Anyway, they're holding their yearly conference right here in Seattle starting Wednesday or Thursday. And so all the writing world is about to descend on us. I myself am not really participating in that for whatever reason. But I am going to be doing a reading tomorrow night at Ghost Gallery in downtown Seattle as a part of the Tiferet Journal's reading, sort of in celebration or in conjunction with the AWP. So if you're in Seattle and you like to hear poetry or just readings in general, please come on down and give it a listen. Again, that's the Ghost Gallery from 6 to 8 p.m. downtown Seattle. And in Portland, the 1st of April, I'll be talking to the Willamette Writers Association, their Portland Bureau. The Old Church, I'll be talking about fearless writing. So if you're in the Portland area, come on by. 7 o'clock, Old Church, 1st of April, Portland, Oregon. And, well, you know, if you want to make a character, if you want to create a believable character, you want to give them dimension, right? For sure. Well, so take, for instance, let's look, for instance, at today's guest, Kathleen George. Now, Kathleen George is the author of a police procedural set in Pittsburgh. Police procedural set in Pittsburgh. She's published 7 of them, to be exact. Just came out with yet another novel, not a part of that series, Johnstown Girls. But okay, so maybe you have a picture in your head of what a woman who writes police procedurals is like. But what if I also told you she's a professor of theater at the University of Pittsburgh? Oh, that changes it slightly, doesn't it? That gives dimension to it. That's kind of an interesting person. What is that person like who both teaches theater, which is one sort of thing, and also writes police procedurals? I'm not sure. I want to find out, which is why I have her on the show, and she's with me right now. Kathleen, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hi, Bill.
How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. I loved your question about how can I be this person who teaches theater and do police procedural.
It is a, you know, I just interviewed someone. Oh, a woman who was a archaeologist by day and a paranormal writer by night, and that was a first combination. I've interviewed a lot of writers of different things, but you're the first theater professor slash procedural writer. So okay. Let's talk about these two jobs. I can imagine where this crossover, but how did this come to be?
There is a tremendous amount of crossover, actually, but came to be because one summer I didn't have anything to direct. I was directing one play after another, and I went back to my first love, which was writing. And I was enjoying myself because I was sort of directing on paper. I got to do everything. I got to do all the parts and the scenery and everything. So I kept writing, and it was a return to writing, really. And now I'm doing both. I'm teaching theater still and publishing fiction. So that's how that happened.
But now this, but though the obvious question is, when you sat down to write, why didn't you sit down to write a play? Why did a book come? Why did fiction come out and not theater? Were you just up to your eyeballs in theater and you'd had enough?
That is the great question. you know, my chair right now is telling me, please write a play and make it a mystery because we can sell the hell out of that. But you can't force where the ideas come from. And for some reason, I think I've always been, not only as a director behind the scenes, you know, making everything happen, but being quiet myself, my mind goes to narrative fiction first.
Interesting.
I was just looking at a passage that I'm going to read in a couple of days at a bookstore, and it's a lot about interior life. It's a report of a child who's running away and what he's thinking and what he's seeing, rather than the highly interactive things that might happen in a play. So,
yeah, of course,
I don't know. Different minds work in different ways, and the stories keep insistently coming at me that way.
You know, I love what you said, that you said you can't force where these ideas come from, and I think it's absolutely true. And it seems to me that, so bear with me on this one, if you will, but one of the things I seek in my writing, in my work, is effortlessness, by which I mean this. When I'm writing something, if I meet resistance, so let's, for instance, I sat down to write a play because I'm a theater person, I think I'm supposed to write a play, and I immediately meet the resistance because, in fact, I'm trying to write, I want it, my heart wants to write a novel. I would back away from that resistance and seek the path of least resistance. Because to write, to try and force myself to write a novel would require effort. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. And you
right?
know, I teach students writing, and you know, when I see them forcing even a motivation, not just the form or a genre, but a motivation on somebody because they've decided the character's got to feel a certain way and got to do certain things.
Yeah.
And you can feel how artificial it is. And they're fighting against themselves when they're forcing it, I think.
Yeah. No. And in fact, that whole effort thing boils down to on a sentence level. Does this sentence, does it, am I trying to force this idea into this piece? Or does it, if it not, if so, let me pull back and not use effort to stick that sentence in, because that's what it'll take. Whereas when it's coming quickly, as you know, I'm sure you've had that experience, it seems...
Oh, yeah.
I know the expression writes itself, maybe is overused.
But,
oh, yeah, for sure. You know, on your website, you do have a nice... Well, actually, I guess it's a link to an interview you did with the Pittsburgh newspaper. But you describe your discovery of writing, which happened when you were pretty young. The sort of normal age, by the way, is 9 by my experience. But you were 8, is that right, when you found the attic, essentially, where you went up there and sort of found your own private little world?
Yes. And
yeah.
I remember
like?
It still so well. I feel like I can still smell. It was clean dust up there, but it was an attic, you know, with the floorboards being heated from the sun. And it's such a memory to me because it was secret, it was private, I was up there making stories, and it just felt wonderful.
Yeah. It's like the imagination itself, which, you know, which is where all your ideas are taking root, is what is more private and more secret than your imagination? Because no one can see it, touch it, taste it, but you, until you decide to share what's there.
Yes, I don't know whether you talk about yourself, whether you talk about something that you're writing as you're writing it or before you write it, but there are a couple of different opinions about whether you should or not. And I have found that it really does ruin it for me if I talk about it first. I have to be in that sort of secret world discovering it for it to be exciting to me.
Yes. You know, I will talk about it sometimes if I have certain ideas that have excited me, because I'm writing memoir-type stuff now, and often ideas get sparked and they'll find their way into my blog or whatever. But I don't like to share the work. I don't like anyone to see it until I really have done what I want to do with it completely.
I totally understand
afraid,
that.
You know what I mean? And your husband's
I definitely
writer. Yeah.
Yes, I'm married to a writer, and we don't show each other what we're working on until it's done.
Yeah, well, because, well, you know what Louis Sachar said? He wrote Holes. He's written a lot of stuff, but the one he got really known for was Holes, that great YA novel. And he said, I know, he said, I won't show it to anybody. He said, because even if they like it, Suppose I show them something from draft two and they think, that's hilarious. And then in draft six, it doesn't belong, but in the back of my mind, I keep remembering how hilarious they thought it was. Maybe I'll leave it in there, and I won't be able to look at it honestly just because I remember how much somebody else liked it at one time. So he won't show it to his editor, his agent, nothing. Not until it's, in his mind, it's completely done.
And it's his way.
Yeah, I understand that. I understand that. And so, all right, so I did theater as a young man. I loved it. I wrote it, directed it, acted it, and I just loved it. It was a lot of fun, but I eventually moved to the straight written word. But I totally get the crossover between theater and fiction, the world of live theater. And to me, I've always felt there was much to be learned from both. But and of course, you're a director. That's your primary role, yes? I mean, do you do any acting yourself?
No, I've never even wanted to act. So,
really?
Yes, and I believe from what I've seen, witnessed, that acting links very well to playwriting, that the best playwrights I get in class are always people who have been acting. They get it immediately in the muscles, in the blood, in the gut, that they are trying to do something active, trying to change something, that they are risking that sort of in that personal, physical way out there. And I think that directing and fiction writing are a little bit more linked, but that's my theory.
But, okay, so to teach me, why is that so? So I can kind of get it because the director has – in mind, I'm assuming sort of the architecture of the thing, the feel of the thing, the flow of the whole thing, all the characters, all the scenes, everything. And that's sort of what a novelist,
right.
Is that how you link over?
I think so, yes. And
yeah.
Also, well, not everybody directs in the same way, but when I was directing, I would meet each actor for hours outside of rehearsal, and we'd work on inner life, what they were thinking, what they were feeling. And sometimes these were inexperienced actors, but by the time we got done filling in all those gaps, they sometimes looked extremely experienced because each second counted for. And I think that sort of taught me something about the way I was thinking about characters and inner life and just how much is going on at any one time in a character.
I see. And so, you know, what's interesting is theater directing is definitely a creative. It's easy to understand what is creative about writing a play or about writing a book, but directing is creative also, but it's an unusual kind of creativity, isn't it? Because you have your hands strangely on nothing in a way and yet on everything. How does the creative muscle get flexed? Because I know it does. I've done it myself, but it's very different than that the monarchy of the novel. You know what I mean?
Yes. I think that some directors are more inventive than other ones. Some want to sort of depart from the script and do their own thing with it, and some, and I put myself in the second category, are almost slavish to the author's intentions, and it becomes a much more interpretive endeavor under those circumstances. So I would think sometimes I was, you know, doing something like Importance of Being Earnest or Arms and the Man, and I would feel like I wanted to hear it exactly as Shaw or Wilde heard it, you know. I'd say I know exactly how that line should go. So in a way, I was being pretty, I don't know, linked to the writing end of it.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to explain. And I was very closely linked to the writer under those circumstances.
Yeah. And, of course, in your own writing, you're doing procedurals. And so, I mean, you know, I understand the beauty of the procedural is you have this plot structure right there. Something has happened, and we've got to find out what. you know, this crime has been committed, why and how. But for you, why were you drawn to that? Because there's so many stories to tell. Why those stories? Do you read a lot of those? Do you watch a lot of them?
No, I watch a bit more of them now than I used to. But what happened was I had been writing other kinds of things, a comic novel and an early version of a novel about the Johnstown flood. And the comic novel was something that people kept telling me they really, really wanted me to do because they liked the character that I had created, a 6'2" lusty woman. And and I was on my 13th draft, and I was changing it constantly. It was never working. And the thing is, it wanted to be a short story, and it didn't want to be a full novel. The short story was quite right. successful, but, you know, I was in that forcing position. And I got so disgusted and, in fact, depressed one summer. I thought, I cannot keep doing this. And I set out to play, to just write a sketch of something I would do if ever I wrote something highly plotted. And so I was asking myself the question, what would I write if I wrote something like that? And then pretty soon I was toying around with paragraphs, and then I was toying around with pages. And and then I realized I didn't know how a kidnapping would be investigated, so I called the police and I called the FBI. And they got so engaged in my story that they were helping me enormously, and I got the feeling of commitment. I thought, well, I have to see this through. I have to finish it. So I did, and that novel was published. It was accepted, and they wanted another one. And so I found myself doing this thing I hadn't been planning to do, but at the same time, mysteries and thrillers and procedurals of all sorts are very linked to theater because they depend on lies and subtext, things being underneath the things that are being said, suspense. So it turns out that a whole lot of people writing mysteries have theater backgrounds.
Really?
I discovered that along the way I had done it. Yeah.
Huh. Well, that's the first I've heard of that. Yeah, you know, subtext, it's funny, when I teach people how to write, when I'm teaching writing and I want to talk about dialogue, one of the first rules I try to give them is, look, the best dialogue you've ever read, the characters are not saying what they mean, and yet you know what they're saying. That if you can...
That's exactly right,
the wife is complaining about the broccoli her husband brought home, but it's the whole marriage. Can you get that in there? Can you get the feeling in there without actually saying it? Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. And the students get frustrated because it's in the conception of what they're writing. They write on the nose at first.
Yeah.
Everybody says exactly what they mean.
Right.
And I point out every example from dramatic literature that I can, based on lying, based on lying, pretend, spinning a different truth. And so as soon as they start doing that, things become thrilling, exciting, really.
Yeah.
But it's funny that a whole profession is based on lying. All of theater is faking something, you know, the scenery's fake. And
you have to believe it, though. Because the moment you stop believing, you have to care. And the moment you stop caring and stop believing, you're just a guy in tights. You're not Hamlet anymore. You're just a guy in tights walking around on this stage. But no, you have to actually not mock Hamlet, but try to be Hamlet to the best of your ability. Just like you have to care about it, or it just all falls apart. It just becomes a big, meaningless lie, it seems to me.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah,
hey,
you do
have
to commit to it.
I've got somebody on the line, I think, who has a question for you, if I know him. What, Jeffrey, is that you?
It is. It is, Bill. It is. How are you, my friend? Another outstanding interview. Wonderful and fascinating.
Thank you.
Kathleen, I'm a fan of your work, of course. I wouldn't be listening in. I'm just curious, what a day is like in the writing life for you, Kathleen.
Whoa.
With all your other commitments to the theater, teaching, the daily routine of our lives anyways, how do you keep all those, juggling all those balls and keep them in the air without them all coming down and hitting you in the head?
At the moment, hitting me in the head.
Oh, no.
Yeah, this,
all right.
Yeah, they are. But I sometimes say the answer is that I don't sleep a lot. And for a long time, I was waking up at 4 in the morning just naturally. So I would get in a couple of hours of writing, and then I'd go and have my regular work day. But then I read an article about how important sleep was, so I've been sleeping a bit longer these days. And I think that usually I can get a good routine going where I write early in the morning, and then I prepare for classes, and I go and teach. And it all sort of works out. But right now, this term is a little strange because I have two books out, one right after the other. And that has become a little bit big to juggle.
Yeah, a lot.
So those morning hours aren't happening now.
No. Well, you know, I wear many hats, and one of the things I found to be important, I don't know if this is how you deal with it, Kathleen, but that I really, when I'm doing one thing, whether it's an interview like this, or I'm writing a blog, or I'm editing an interview or whatever, I am doing that, and I let myself completely have that experience and enjoy it completely for what it is, and to the best of my ability, let all those other things go, because I want to bring my full attention to what it is I'm actually doing at that moment. Does that make sense?
It's good advice. It's very good advice. I think I've experienced both of, multitasking too much and also just being so steeped in the thing that I'm doing that it's a pleasure.
It's a pleasure to be steeped in just one thing or just whatever it is you're doing at that moment.
Well, my favorite thing to be steeped in is writing, and
is that right?
The second favorite is reading, but I don't always listen to that wonderful advice, and sometimes I do some multitasking.
Hey, now if you had a day free, I think I know my answer to this for myself personally, but I'm always curious. Writers are also different. If you had a day free, how many hours could you do in a clip where you feel that those are all productive hours? What's your general limit?
How long could I write?
Yeah, and you feel where you felt like it was valuable writing before you burnt out.
If I took a break, I could probably do 6 hours.
Really? Ooh, that's pretty good. Yeah, you need a break in the middle, and you're able to stay connected and creative and whatnot.
Yeah, it would be a tough day, but I could get a second wind.
Yeah, and okay, so now do you? Oh, see, now I can usually guess this. I'm listening to your voice, and I'm getting mixed signals. I'm guessing you do some outlining, not a lot, but I'm guessing you do some outlining, that you have a pretty good skeleton before you sit down to write. Am I close?
No. I'm not an outliner.
Oh, rats. Okay.
So I think maybe as I progress and I have more and more books, I start to get some sense of where it might go. I definitely, when I began, didn't know anything about where the story was going to go. And I know some people are totally shocked by that. They think, how could you dare to do it? But to me, it's fun to not know.
Interesting.
I do it because I get a charge out of it.
Well, and you're not the first writer, even of crime novels I've interviewed who write that way. It's surprising, I know, for a lot of people, because you would think that if you're writing a crime novel, the one thing you got to know before you get in is who done it and why. But you say no. You don't even know that.
Well, I think I know who done it because My crime novels don't hide that. They are more about who knows what when and who's going to catch him and how.
Okay, gotcha.
How miserable is this perpetrator? If you think about, I'm afraid to say the word Macbeth. We know what Macbeth did right away, but we're watching the process of his suffering and making things worse, and also we're watching the process of people figuring it out. So I'm a little closer to that model.
So funny. For our listeners, you may not know, but you're supposed to refer to it as that Scottish tragedy. There's a in the theater, I don't know why, but there's a whole superstition around Macbeth, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. There's some pretty wild things written about productions in which the scenery fell on the actors and all kinds of awful things happened.
Okay, well, so far we're safe anyway, aren't we? We're just talking about writing. All right, well.
We're just
so
on
you,
the radio.
So you, that's right, it was just on the radio. All right, so you're not an outliner, and so you like, because it for you, the part of the fun is finding out, right? It's that you get to come there almost like a reader a little bit, just the way the reader wants to find out. You kind of want to find out, too.
That's exactly what it feels like. I get up in the morning saying, gee, I wonder what's going to happen today. And that makes it fun for me. That isn't for everybody because I know plenty of wonderful writers who are outliners, but their purposes are different than mine. Yeah. They're wanting to polish in a certain way and include different age groups in each chapter. It's much more conscious about what the reader wants, and I'm afraid that I get so into what the character wants that that's where I'm always headed.
Well, it's an interesting idea that you can write for what the reader wants, but no one knows what the reader wants. Give me a break. You only ever, I mean, I know in theory you do, but really, what do you really know about what you want? Maybe I'm getting up on a soapbox here, but I feel the reader's not there. The only one there is you. How can you know? We have all this marketing blah, 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 but do we really know? Did anybody know they wanted Harry Potter before it showed up? No, how could they? It hadn't arrived yet. So how do you know? Does that make sense?
Oh, it makes sense to me.
Yeah,
yeah,
I don't.
I mean, I'm sure she was working in solitude thinking, will anybody ever read this? So that's a very interesting example.
Yeah, and in fact, she was rejected by 12 publishing houses, and her agent said, well, you can write children's fiction, but you won't make any money off it because no one does. Because at that time, that was the case, I guess. But you see, that's why you listen to yourself above all. All right, so we have about 30 seconds here. I have one more question for you, Kathleen. What I'd like you to do is finish this sentence for me. If writing has taught me anything, it has taught me what?
That stories are the greatest teachers and mothers to us all.
Ah, beautiful. We're going to leave it there. Kathleen, that is great. Thank you so much. Okay, so just out now.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
Oh, you're most welcome. Johnstown Girls. Yes, it's out now?
Not yet. April 1st.
April 1st, the Johnstown Girls. Best of luck, Kathleen. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
You're very welcome.
Oh, the stories are the greatest teachers and mothers to us all. Mothers. Comforters, guides, companions. I have to agree with her. I really do. I think that life is a story you are telling yourself, and the better stories you read and the better stories you tell, the better your life becomes. It's been the case for me. It's really been the case for me for my entire life. So tell the best stories you can, whether it's on the page or to your friends or lovers or children. Read the best stories you can and just watch how things work out. I'll be back here next week, same time, same channel. Until then, do what you love, be with who you love who you love, and come on.